So welcome to our South Campus. You're watching live today. Those of you down in Buda and Pflugerville and Central, and especially those of you online. If you're in the room at North, we help welcome everybody who's watching across all of Gateway. We're so glad that you are with us. So, you know, you guys know I like questions, so I ask a lot of questions. And so if you don't like questions, you're going to hate the next 30 minutes because questions make us really think. And some of us don't want to think right now. You just kind of want to sit. But we want to grow. If you're already going to be here for 30 minutes, if you're going to be watching online or listening back on the podcast, we at least take the next 30 minutes and be challenged and grown. So we're going to ask some questions. So here's a question that might seem trivial to you. Did you know that there is a true, safe way to cross the street? Some of you are like, of course there is. I mean, what are we, children? I mean, we know how to cross the street. But really, I want you to think about this. I'm going to give you 10 seconds, and we're going to take 10 seconds across all of our campuses and online and in the room, and we're going to be quiet for 10 seconds, and here's what I want you to do during the 10 seconds. I want you to think about what are the steps you would describe to somebody on how to cross the street, all right? So if somebody came across, and they don't know how to cross the street, what are the steps you would give them to cross the street, all right? Here we go. And the goal is, how many steps can you break it down into? Ready, set, go. Think about it. Some of you are struggling. Some of you got it. All right. How many steps did you come up with to cross the street? Don't say it out loud. How many steps did you come up with to cross the street? Was it 3 steps? Stop, look, listen, right? Stop, look, cross, whatever it might be. Maybe it's 5 steps. Maybe it's 7 steps. I Googled this just to see what I would come up with. And my goodness, you can Google just about everything or anything nowadays. And this was the most exhaustive list I found on how to cross the street. I was so tired reading the list, I didn't want to cross the street. Number one, find a strategic place to cross. Number two, stop at the curb where you decided to cross. Number three, look to the left for oncoming traffic. Number four, look to the right for oncoming traffic. Number five, I didn't think about this one, listen for oncoming traffic. Number six, I'm just going home at this point. Make, once clear, walk briskly across the street. And number seven, make sure you walk in a straight line across the street. 7 steps for something that seems so natural to us. Somebody taught us how to cross the street. We pull up, we just look, and we go. But somebody sat down and wrote down a 7-step process on how to cross the road. And you're saying, don't be so dramatic, Carlos. Come on, we're not children. Listen, I'm not being dramatic. I have data. Ready? According to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, I did not make that up, it's a real thing, there were 7,388 pedestrian deaths in 2021. 7,300. Now, we don't know if it was the person who was crossing the street or people who were driving the cars, but there was something about what's come so natural to us wasn't so natural in 2021. See, since the 1970s, the amount of pedestrian deaths has plummeted way down. But in the COVID year of 2020, when hardly anybody was driving or you were just driving locally, everybody forgot how to do everything. We forgot how to drive. We forgot how to get our registration done. We forgot how to, and some of you are like, oh yeah, it's been 3 years. I still haven't done that. We forgot how to cross the street. In a post-COVID world, we're having to relearn the basics of life. And since 2020, the number of deaths is going up from people crossing the road. It's going up. Well, of course, it's the children or it's people who are maybe a little bit older having a hard time. Can I tell you, the 2 demographics that are having the least accidents crossing the road are kids under 12 and adults over 70. The 2 highest are between 20 and 59. that number is growing exponentially. And so when we talk about the basics of life, we also talk about this is a matter of life and death, and the basics of our spiritual life can be a matter of spiritual life and death. And so that's why we've partnered with our kids ministry here at Gateway Church. And every week in this series, we're partnering up and how they're talking about things. And I had a funny story last week. A guy here at our North Campus stopped me and he goes, you know, we're in this series. And we were talking to our son and our son said, Dad, does God know your thoughts? And he goes, yeah, son, God knows your thoughts. And his son said, uh-oh. And that was the end of the story. His son just walked off. Because there are some basics we have to remind ourselves about spirituality. And for those of us who are just learning about spirituality, learning about life in Christ, learning about the church, these are great understandings of what it means to follow Jesus. So as we partner with our kids' ministry and their values, we are this week talking about You Belong. And here's what they say in kids' ministry about You Belong. Engaging in healthy community can and should be a spiritual habit we develop. Whether it's in a church, at home, or at school, everyone wants to know that they have a place to belong. And we love that because we say things like, you can belong before you believe. And we don't just say it, we really believe it. We say, you can belong before you know how to behave. Some of you don't know the unwritten rules of going to church, or some of you are here because you don't like the unwritten rules of church, and we really do believe that. And why is there a grace? Why is there a grace in our culture here at Gateway? Why is there a grace when you're in groups and you're in relationships? Why is there a grace when it comes to interacting with one another? Because we understand, and we hope you understand, the value of being in relationship with one another. And sometimes, when the relationship with one another has too many rules, we then pull out of the relationship. For those of us who are a little bit older, remember when you were in college, your first adult relationship, and you're dating somebody, and you're like, man, this person is very needy. They have a lot of, you know, rules about how to date them, how to engage with them. And I don't even remember all the rules and I get in trouble. And you just walk away from the relationship like this isn't much of a relationship because you've imposed a set of rules that is so exhaustive. We no longer have a relationship. We have a transaction, right? So we understand and we hope you understand that in relationship there is grace. And why is there a grace when we are together to belong? Because in community is where we are fully known. And when we really belong, it's the most we are aligned to God's design for our lives. That we would not be alone. In a world, in a culture that values alone. And there's nothing wrong with having alone time. But there is something that goes against how God created us and wired us to live a life in isolation. And to put it plainly, here's what we say. We believe that we, whether it's one campus, all of our campuses, in your groups, we is greater than me. We is greater than me. And one of my favorite books is The Jungle Book. So I've quoted this book quite a bit over the years, but Rudyard Kipling says this in the book, for the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. There's something about belonging, understanding where you belong and how you belong, and then once you belong, how do you create a space for others to belong, to find their place? We're gonna jump into the book of Acts here in a little bit, but this passage refers to what a lot of people refer to when it talks about community in the early church. When post-Jesus, he ascends to heaven, and they're trying to build this community and how it grew and how beautiful it was. And I break it down, because this is how my brain works, into lead goals and lag goals. Some of you are like, I don't want to think about work right now, but just give me a minute. Lead goals are things that you can control. Your efforts, you will make a difference. And there are lag goals that you don't get to control. But if you lead really well, then maybe it will impact the lag goal. And here's what we find in this passage. I'm going to break it down for us here in a second. But before we do, I want you to understand that there was a mandate from Jesus about community, about how to interact with one another, which we've talked about quite a bit from John chapter 13, verse 34. A new command I give you. A new, which means it was not normal, which means it was not seen. It means it was invented in the heart of God. It was not currently seen within humanity. So a new command I give you, love one another. Why was that so new? Because the culture in the day was hierarchical. You were either free or slave. You were male, female, child. Everything was hierarchical, and yet Jesus came to abolish much of that, which is what we read about in Galatians and the book of Galatians, and he said, just love one another without any strings attached. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Sounds good, right? Sounds really good. Except there's work it takes to love people. How many of you can identify somebody in your life, it takes a lot of work to love them? Come on, just raise your hand. It's okay. Just raise your hand. It takes a lot of work to love them. How many of you know that you're probably one of those people? So the disciples are following this command after they've seen Jesus come to the earth, live a sinless life, lead people, do amazing things in the earth, die as a perfect sacrifice for us. He's risen from the dead. He spends time with them, ascends back to heaven, and then they have a decision to make. What now? What do I do now? I mean, can you imagine you have been with the Son of God? And you have seen miracle after miracle, and now he's left and charged you to love one another and charged us to make a difference in the world. What now? How do we live this out? Acts chapter 2 says how they did it, starting in verse 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give anyone who had need. And every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So what do we learn from this mindset of this first group of believers in Jesus? Well, how can we glean from their disposition, how they position themselves? Here's the first one. They were in a constant state of learning. Verse 42. They were constantly learning. Now, how many of you are like me? Raise your hand if you're like this. You see a book, you promise you're going to read it, and you order it, and it sits on your bookshelf. That's you. Come on, just raise your hand. It's okay. You broke the budget at your house. I have bookshelves full of books I have not read, but I have bookshelves full of books I have read. I love to learn. And they were in a constant state of learning. Even though they were new to the Christian faith, new to being followers of Jesus, they found themselves that every day, how can I learn and grow? Are we doing that? Are we positioning ourselves to always learn? Verse 42 after that, they shared life with others. In a day where there was no social media or no way to pronounce everything you were doing, you were just a commoner, you were low on the totem pole. Nobody cared, and yet they cared to share their lives with others. And they taught others that your life matters. They shared life with one another. And also in verse 42, they broke bread together. Everybody likes to eat. Some people love to eat. Some people are foodies. You say a food item, and they will tell you the top 10 places to eat in all of Austin. And there's some of us, food is just fuel. I like food because I need fuel to keep doing my job. And that's the spectrum of food, but everybody needs sustenance. So if we need sustenance, what they found is let's break bread over that sustenance. And culturally, If you ate with somebody, there was an invitation to relationship. It wasn't just a meal. It was an invitation to life, to family. What else do we learn? Verse 42, they had a life of prayer. Just a constant state of communing with God. And keep in mind, this was a new thing for them. I mean, here they are learning that they have direct access to God, that when Jesus died on the cross, he tore the veil, and the middleman necessary between humanity and God is now gone. And now you and I, and they understood, they have access to God, and they took full advantage. Do we take full advantage? That we can commune and pray with God. We just finished 14 days of prayer, and I wasn't sure how everybody was participating from all of our campuses and everybody watching online, and I was like, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to pray. I feel like we should as a church, and we started doing it in January and now in August, and you know, we had the app and videos, and I didn't know how people were engaging prayer. I just knew that we as a staff were going to be called to prayer, and God was calling us to do this, and all of our staff did a lot of work to make that happen. And I don't know the final numbers, but I do know this. On the first day of prayer, I got this last week. It encouraged my heart as our pastor. And the team told me, on the first day, 1,800 people were praying with us. 1,800 people who said, yes, I'm going to. And those are just the people who engaged the app, not including some of you who are like, I don't want the app. I'm just going to pray by myself. We know there were people in our community engaging a life of prayer and the gift we have to commune with God. They were doing that. Verse 43, they stayed in a constant place and state of awe. They were just in awe of what God was doing. You ever met somebody who's just always like saying, ooh, that's amazing. You know what I'm talking about? And you're like, it's not that big a deal. No, that is so cool. And you're like, come on, chill out a little bit. That's what these people were doing. They were in a place of wonder. Place of wonder, like, oh my gosh, God is doing something. And there was an expectancy that God was going to do more. There was a faith that rose up in them. And I wonder, do we let the things of the world keep us from wondering what could happen? But they were in a constant state of awe. And I wonder, I want us to be in a constant state of awe. I look at kids here at church. I look at kids in the community. And you know what? I'm going to be honest. Some of you guys know this. Some of you don't. But growing up, I hated kids. Even when I was a kid, I hated my friends. I just didn't like little kids. And then I became a teenager. All the teenagers were serving with kids in our church. First of all, I wasn't a Christ follower, even though my dad was the pastor. Everybody knew. I didn't believe in God. But all my friends were serving in kids. And I was like, kids stink. Fast forward, I came to Christ as a sophomore in college, and a couple years later, I met my wife, Libby, and we got pregnant pretty early on, and we're getting excited, and we tell my mom, we're going to have a baby, and my mom's like, oh no, not you. You hate kids. And I was like, I know, but these will be mine. And what I've had to learn, because I don't have in my nature this chemistry with children. But I've learned to maybe see things through a children's lens that helps me grow. So you know what I do a lot of? You guys are going to think this is corny. When I'm talking to my son, Max, I just sometimes get down and I just look at it from his angle. Now, when I'm mad, I don't do that because I lord over him when I do that. But when we're in a good place, just being honest, right? We're in a good place. I love seeing eye to eye. He gets on the floor a lot. I'm like, I'm only 46, but I already don't like being on the floor. Until a few years ago, I heard that the number one thing you can do as an exercise as you get older is roll on the floor. I was like, okay, I'll roll on the floor with Max. And we wrestle. And now my wife hates it because we do it at Target and the grocery store. And we do it everywhere because it's just being in a place of wonder. How many of us have lost the wonder of life, much less the wonder of what God could do in our life? They were in this constant state. They lived generously, verse 45. They sold everything. Some of us who've been in the church, we get caught up with money and the church, and I totally get it. A lot of people have ruined it for a lot of people. But I'm telling you, they didn't lose sight of that, because sometimes you might hear somebody say, well, you got to pay your tithe or your 10% or start somewhere, or journey towards generosity and all these things. And you know what these people did? They didn't calculate what their 10% was. They just sold it and lived together. Nowadays, if somebody did that, you're like, I'm in a cult. They told me to sell my house and bring every last dollar. But that's how they live. So generous, and then with their time. Verse 46, they went to the church building together. Not only when they were in their homes breaking bread together, but they also did what many of you are doing today. They went to the temple together. And what did they do in the temple? Verse 47, they praised God together. See these elements, these two or three verses, these things that these people did, this beautiful model of what it could look like, and the wonder of following God with other people and knowing that you belong somewhere. If those were the lead things, then what were the lag things? The lag, the byproduct of the things they could control. They could control all those things, but they couldn't control were the lag things. I'm just going to list them out real quick. They saw miracles take place. They couldn't control that, but they postured themselves. They shared everything. See, you can give, but to share comes from a place of willingness to share. They not only met their group's needs, but they began to meet the needs of the marginalized and the poor in their community. They were seen as that generous. They carried a heart of worship. See, we can lead you in praise, we can lead you in song, but we can't make you have a heart for worship. That's the thing you and I get to control. But they led with praise, and then they carried a heart of worship. They shared meals, which they can control, but listen to this, they did it with great joy. Don't hit your partner if you have a partner next to you. But how many times has your partner invited somebody over for dinner and you're not happy about it? You did what? Yeah, they're coming over tonight. Tonight? 6:30. 6:30? It's my boss, babe. I can't do anything about it. Come on. We've had these conversations, right? But they did it with great joy. Can you imagine the next time somebody came and said, or your partner or your kids with their friends, hey, I invited somebody over for dinner. Oh, that's amazing. We're so glad they're coming over. You know what we do? Well, who's going to do the dishes? Who's going to pay for that? Most of you know, I'm a cheapskate. So my kids have their friends over, and it happens to be a night we're going to order out. And I start thinking, okay, I'm going to take it out of Bella's bank account for her friend to eat. I'm going to take it out of Carl's bank account for his girlfriend to eat. And my wife's like, stop it. We're going to share with great joy. Great joy. Some of us grin and bear it, and yet these early people saw it as a blessing and a joy to live life with others. That they belonged and somebody else could belong. And then here's the best one. Each day, God was moving on people's hearts and the community was growing. They couldn't control that. See, they positioned themselves and God caused it to grow. And shouldn't this be our hope? Shouldn't this be our hope that the life and freedom maybe you've received as you follow Jesus becomes the life and freedom somebody else can walk in? As you've belonged, that you create space for somebody else to belong? Hebrews 10 says this, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. Let's read that again. Not giving up meeting together as some in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching, the day of Christ's return, when we who belong with one another will belong with God for eternity. That's the great hope. So what are the questions for us? Really quick. Where am I? Where are you? Where am I being obedient to Jesus' command to love one another? Found this quote from N.T. Wright that I think just sums that up about intentionality. It said this, good Christian liturgy is friendship in action. Love taking thought. The covenant relationship between God and his people, not simply discovered and celebrated like the sudden meeting of friends, exciting and worthwhile though that is, but thought through and relish and planned and prepared. Ultimately, better way for the relationship to grow, and at the same time, a way of demonstrating what the relationship is all about. It's about belonging with one another, not like we're friends passing in the street, but that we've prepared to live life together and grow in Christ. Where am I being obedient to Jesus' command to love one another? Or are we waiting for somebody else to love us first? Maybe it starts with us. Maybe it starts with the phone call. Maybe it's our obedience which will spur somebody else to walk in obedience. Second question is this: what kind of group is my next step? What kind of group is my next step? And all of our campuses have groups, and there's ways to grow and ways to heal and ways to be encouraged. Sometimes you have couples events like we do here at North and at South. Sometimes it's parenting groups across campuses. There's all sorts of opportunities. It's about you stepping out, no matter what campus or online, and saying, okay, what is my next step when it comes to belonging and being part of a group of people? The challenge is for us. And what does this mean for Gateway? Sometimes I get asked things like, do we do these kinds of things as a ploy, as a strategic next step to make sure that we are controlling the narrative and helping people? And listen, here's what I'm gonna tell you. This is not a ploy. This is not an initiative. This is who we are. At the core, we've been doing this for 25 years. We are a church that believes in groups, and we're trying to remove all the obstacles to get back to the main thing. It's relationship with one another. It's breaking bread together. It's praying together. Being there for one another. Why? It's the value of belonging. But no matter what group you're in, you're going to hear more about this over the next year. There are three things we want every group to do. And not just groups, you and I to embody. Three simple things. One, we'll always lean into relationship. We're going to lean into relationship to be fully known and to know others. Something that we're pretty good at. It's kind of what we're known for in our city, is having relationship with people. We're going to lean in. We're always going to do that. Number two, we're going to look up to God. We're going to look up, and as we lean into relationship, where can God be in the center of our friendships, our relationships, through prayer and through understanding who he is in Scripture? Yesterday, I was talking to a couple friends of mine, and they were sharing something really difficult that they're going through, and they were sharing the story. And I had this moment where I was like, I could just be a good listener and hear the story, and that would have been good. Or we can pray about the situation happening. And we just stopped right there, and I said, hey, do you mind if, why don't we just pray together? And it was a couple, and it was me, and we just put our arms, the three of us, around each other, and we're just praying together, and we started crying together. It was this impromptu moment, because sometimes leaning in is the right thing, and sometimes taking it before God is the right next thing. So we looked up, God, help my friends in this situation. Give them wisdom. And then out of that, after we lean in and we look up, number three, we step out. We always have a next step. We always have a thing that God's asking us to do, no matter where we are, whether we're exploring faith and we're new to this whole church thing and God thing, or you've been doing it for 50 years of your life. There's always a place, because we learn in verse 42 what they postured themselves to learn and to grow. Because when we belong for the lifetime. And once we belong, it's our job to continue to grow so that others can learn from us. I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about what your next step is, And as we were talking about, you know, crossing the street and people forgetting how to cross the street, unfortunately, thousands of people have died in the last few years forgetting this, or drivers forgetting the rules of the road for pedestrians. I thought sometimes if we aren't intentional about how to cross the street into relationships, it truly is a matter of life and death to our spiritual walk. And isolation is killing many of us. Not because of isolation by itself, but isolation with the issues of life. And it reminded me of when I first came to Christ, and I told you already, I was 20 years old, and I was 19, actually, and I was a sophomore in college. I was about to turn 20, and I gave my life to Christ, and it's the craziest thing. On a Saturday night, I was up all night, and I was at a club, and I'd been with somebody, and that was my life, you know, as a teenager and as a young adult. And Sunday morning, something came over me, and I was like, I need to go to church. So I went to a church. I hadn't been in church in a long time. And you're probably thinking, oh, you came to Jesus at a church service. Nah. It was an okay church service. But that afternoon, I went home, and I gave my life to Christ by myself in a room. And my life's never been the same. And somehow, I walked away from the drugs and the addictions that were in my life and the sexual dysfunctions that were in my life and began to walk in some healing. But in that process, somebody stopped me at our church. And they said, well, do you want to be a group leader? I was like, excuse me? You don't want me to be a group leader. You don't want me sharing my stories with a bunch of teenagers. And they're like, yeah. No, we want you to be. No, you won't be the main group leader. We'll have this guy named Chad. He's gonna lead, Chad Miles. He's going to lead the group, but you're going to be with him. And I was like, yeah, somebody else has got the responsibility. I'll show up, hang out with a bunch of kids. So I told my mom, I'm starting this group. And my mom made my brother join it. I didn't want him in it because it was a bunch of 12-year-old boys and I was 19. I was 20 by this point. But she made me let him into the group. And with a group of boys, and Chad had only come to Christ 6 months before me. So like these two people just trying to grow in Jesus with a bunch of 12-year-old boys, we're like, what do we do? So we started playing golf with them and basketball. Somebody had to remind us to like look up, make sure God's part of the conversation. Because we're having a good time and our group is growing, of course, because we're playing basketball and playing golf and doing all sorts of fun stuff. And we started growing our own spiritual walk as the leaders, and we started helping these students. I look back 26 years later. Chad and I didn't help these young men become the men that they are. But God did use us to plant the initial seeds. And it was Clayton, Clinton, and Normandy, the three primary boys who were there in and out through the entire group. And they sat in the back row of student ministry and nobody could get to them. But Chad and I just spent time with them and loved them. These young adults spending our lives with these kids that were 12. And now, man, you see their lives. Clayton came up to me at 15 years old. We grew with the group and he said, hey, I play the piano. I was like, you do? Yeah. I connected him to our worship leader and he started playing the piano in high school. By the time he was a senior, he was playing in the main church service. Now Clayton and Ani Brooks are worship pastors at a church in North Carolina. Now, hey, hold on. Not because we did anything, except lay the first seeds to help Clayton feel like he belonged. Then there was this, our church was in the hood in Oak Cliff. If you're from Dallas, you know Oak Cliff, like that's where we're from. Oak Cliff, and two streets over from our church, a kid named Clinton would walk over. Clinton was in our group. And Clinton met a girl named Portia who was also in our group. A few years later, I did their wedding. Clinton and Portia have three beautiful boys. They're going to be on the screen. And now they're worship leaders, and Portia travels and speaks. And they're pastors in Minnesota. It's awesome. And then my kid brother. I didn't ruin his life. Just invested in it. And now he's a church planner with his wife, Shirley, and three kids in Orlando, Florida. Can I tell you something? 1 Corinthians tells us that some plant and some water, but God causes it to grow. I didn't cause those boys to grow. What Chad and I did is help three boys belong who were in the back row that nobody really cared to talk to. We helped them belong and planted seeds of belonging. And somebody came along in the years after that to help grow that and water that. But guess what? God caused it to grow. We can help you belong. We can position you. We can be in relationship with you and bring you in. We can point you up to God. But when it comes to out and stepping out and how to grow, that's on you and I. We have to take responsibility. We can create an atmosphere, but you and I have to step into it and allow God to do something. But here's what's amazing. If we will lean into one another for relationship, if we'll cause God to be the center of our life as we grow in Him through prayer and scripture, our next steps could be beautiful because you belong because we is greater than me. And here's what I'll tell you. If you will take the step to belong, I promise you, God is faithful to grow you, your marriage, your relationship. Maybe you're single, your business, wherever you're at. God is faithful and just. So as we go back to our campuses, I'm gonna pray real quick. And we're gonna sing a song together about the goodness of God and his faithfulness. And as we do that, can we just say, God, it's my job to position myself. It's my job to lean into relationship. It's my job to position, to belong. And God, if I do it, you're faithful. Something will shift in my life. So God, thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your mercy. Thank you that you are with us. Thank you for our church and for leaders here at Gateway that want to be in relationship with people all over our city. Will you challenge us? Will you prick our hearts to take a step to belong? It is a gift that we will give ourselves. And once we receive that gift, how can we give that gift of belonging to others? Thank you for your faithfulness. We praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.